Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast for May 30th. I'm John Gibson, and joining me as usual is Jim Allen.
Hi, John. How's everything going?
I'm doing okay, buddy.
All right.
Let's see. We've got a lot to discuss today. Hopefully we can get it in a reasonable amount.
Yeah, we'll try.
We're going to discuss scoring. We're going to discuss interleague and a boneheaded play by one of our foreign players and answer a question that we got. So let's get to clearing the bases.
Okay. Well, first of all, of course, the obvious thing this year is the scoring. You can't watch a game. You can't look at the numbers without seeing how few runs are being scored.
We were watching. We worked in the office today for you guys who are listening, and we were half watching the Golden Eagles of Rakuten play the Hanshin Tigers, and it was at points. At some points, it was just unwatchable, and I was only watching half the game.
And we had 1-0. It's 1-0 game, and they're scoreless 12-inning ties, and you name it. We've had
soccer.
Pulsating draws, baby. Okay. Well, anyway, I've been looking at these as some of our listeners may have remembered. I've been looking at the numbers. We had an odd season this year. It started on April 12th instead of in March. And the weather affects how many runs are scored to some degree. So essentially to do the analysis, I've been looking at the dates from April 12th. 2000, comparing this year's season from April 12th, 2000, the games last year from April 12th.
Right, so essentially setting
same
up your
date.
Analysis for the same dates. Right.
We're skipping the games in March when there isn't a lot of scoring anyway. And basically,
because most of our Latin players are so cold that they can barely get to the batter's box.
Right? They're all frozen. They can't walk. You know, you got to feel for these guys. You got to bring out the heaters. You see Alex Cabrera out there with his snood on and his scuba gloves in March. You just think, man, get this guy a heater or something.
Well, and he can't swing the bat because he's got so much on.
Yeah, okay. So anyway, what we've got is just lack of offense. And this lack of offense is mostly, well, you name it, but the big thing is the home runs are not there.
And a lot of people are immediately going to point to this new ball.
And I think that's absolutely the right place to point. I think there's no doubt about it.
Yeah, because it's making some of the pitchers look great. And, you know, we talked about it a little bit, but I looked at the stats, and I saw that 11 Pacific League pitchers and 5 Central League pitchers have ERAs less than 2.
This is going to be the dead ball. This is going to be really interesting to see how this pans out, whether they can even keep this ball around, simply because it's going to be unpopular.
Right,
the owners are going to start screaming, give us our baseball back.
Well, the owners, but the players might also say, hey, look, and this is something that Tony Blanco said to me. He made it sound like it was this dastardly plan that perhaps owners wanted to pay their players less money and they could bargain better if they didn't have as many home runs. If the guy said, that's what he told me. He says, if guys have fewer home runs, then you can't say, hey, look, this is what I did. This was my production. I don't think it's that dastardly.
I don't think it's that dastardly. I don't think the owners really, I think what they're looking at is whether people are buying it or not. And I think people are going to get old to watch, get tired of watching 1-0 games. I mean, you can have really exciting 1-0 games, but what's going on here is instead of, you know, talking about the raw numbers, which are really long, and basically let's say this. Everything on offense is down. Walks are down. Strikeouts are up. Home runs are really down. Triples are fairly well down. Doubles are quite a bit down. And singles are down very slightly. So there are hits, but there's very little power. Lots of strikeouts. And what I think, when you look at when balls are getting in play, they're not being hit as hard.
Not being hit with authority.
They're not getting good swings on these pitches. Now, what I think happens, you know, just from a eyeball glance that has nothing to do with anything and no basis in solid empirical data is this.
Mm-hmm.
Every batter is seeing slightly different pitches than from what they're used to. They're dealing with a ball that is something they're not used to hitting.
Right, and I think Matt Merton, who, geez, he set a record for hits last year. What was it, 214. And he said, and I think you were there at Tokyo Dome when the Tigers came to visit, and he said he thinks there's a bigger break on the forkball.
That would make sense, because this ball is a little slicker than the old ball, and with the forkball, what you want is no rotation.
Mm-hmm.
Because the ball to make the thing tumble. And mm-hmm. the slicker it is, the easier it will be to have no rotation on the forkball. So I think that may be a big thing. Now, I'd love to find out. I wish I could get Patrick Newman in here to basically compare all the guys who throw forkballs and see if they're that much more effective than everybody else. I know, as I said before, Tateyama made a big deal about throwing his forkball in the spring. He used to rarely throw it in the zone, and now it's become a big weapon for him.
Yeah, and he's having a good
Shohei Tateyama, the guy who got his... That's correct. Okay. Now, the other thing to note about this and what I was leading into is this. With the offense going down, I think what may be happening is all the batters are essentially going back to square one. They're like, they're entering the league to some degree. They've, a big chunk of their experience in this game, it has just evaporated.
Mm-hmm.
So now we're going to learn about who can adapt and who can adjust. Because these guys, you know, it doesn't matter if you're Ogasawara or you're Sakamoto or you're Hideto Asamura. Basically, you're all going back to square one, learning to hit a baseball again. Because everything you knew is now, not everything you knew, but all the way, all the different ways the hitter applied the lessons that he knew about how to hit a baseball and in what counts and what kind of swing mm-hmm. to get certain pitchers, a lot of that experience is no longer applicable.
Well, yeah, but you would think this adjustment period, and they played with the ball in spring, and then they
sure.
had the first week of the season. I mean, look at Sledge. He hit all those home runs, turned around Sledge with the Oklahoma, and he really hasn't homered since. He's gone.
Right.
And
well, the
like,
pitchers are adjusting, too. I think the pitchers are adjusting, too. And at first I thought the pitchers would have the bigger adjustment because just learning how to throw their pitches. But I think what happened is they're learning to throw new pitches.
Hmm.
Almost by their pitches are getting different looks.
I would venture to say even that after that first week.
Right.
Where
we saw lots of home runs.
We saw a lot of production, and we thought that this ball is not going to make a difference. I think somebody found something, and with Twitter and all the word of mouth, and you know, it only takes one guy looking at a video screen and for word to get around. I think they all found out that that you can throw this ball a little bit differently, and they're all doing it. And that's, I mean, even the upper echelon pitchers who we usually see who have good numbers, you know, have even better numbers this year. And you know.
Right.
One in the ones, I mean, 11 pitchers. That's far too many for people who like offense.
Well, we're talking basically a run less per game, per nine innings than we had in 2010 through this time of the year.
Is that
now,
both teams combined or per team?
That's all 12 NPB teams.
Okay, everybody. All right.
Okay, last year from April 12th to May 28th, all the NPB teams were averaging 4.33 runs per nine innings scored.
That's combined.
And this year, that's 3.4. So it's a nine-tenths of a run.
Essentially,
That's a fairly – and what you'll find is that it's not like every pitcher is going to be down a run. What you're going to find is the best pitchers are going to be really good.
Yeah, and that's what you're
pitchers,
seeing.
They're not going to affect at all.
Yeah, that's what you're seeing. Guys like
even.
Yeah, Yuki Karakawa of Lotte, he's got the best ERA in the Pacific League at 1.46. And, you know.
Yeah, it's like a MasterCard commercial. Priceless, baby.
Priceless, baby. Well, yeah, I think that after the season, the pitchers are going to be putting a price on it.
You think so? I see that
when it comes
thing.
To salary negotiations, yeah.
Yeah, well, that may be the thing. They might figure it's easier to pay pitchers than it is hitters. I don't know.
All right. Well, you know, the home runs have not been completely absent now. Yokohama Yokohama, of all teams, leads the Central League in home runs with 28. Go figure. And yeah. Hiroshima, in a homer-friendly park, only has 12.
They don't play in a homer-friendly park. What'd you think then?
What we've discussed before was that you said the ball flies out of there. I think the ball flies out of there. I'm sorry. You say the numbers don't indicate.
Last year it did because, A, it was really hot, B, they switched to Mizuno.
So it's not necessarily the park, but they hit a lot of home runs there.
No.
The number was high.
No, not in Hiroshima. Last year, yes. This year, no. Before they switched to the Mizuno ball, no.
All right. Well, last year, yes. So I'm going off of last year's numbers. How's that? And last year's
okay. last year's ball, Dave.
Well, I just remember. I remember seeing the ball fly out of there, and I remember seeing the first home run. It was hit by Kazuhiro Wada of the Chunichi Dragons, and it was a ball that, it was a drive that looked like a normal fly ball to left, and it zipped out of there. And I said, "Wow, this park really is going to be conducive to home runs." And it looked that way on TV. I still haven't visited the park, so I have to go there and give it the eye test, look at it, see how the ball's carrying. But from the first time I saw that park and how it played, it seemed to be a good hitter's park for fly balls. But we'll see. I mean, the numbers might not reflect that it's a home run park because the Carp don't have a lot of home run hitters. And that could be part of the problem with the numbers. They have a lot of fleet-footed guys and little tiny infielders.
You thought they were. You were talking when you and Michael were on the other night. You were talking about the Carp were going to score runs because they got a good offense. They score runs when they played in the old Shimin Kyujo. They scored some runs last year when they juiced up the ball with Mizuno. They don't have a good offense. They really haven't had a good offense in years.
Yeah.
Okay, right. The Carp have, just as we speak, they have four home runs at home in Matsuda Stadium this year. And 650 in 564 at-bats.
Good grief. That's terrible. They've got a lot of little, tiny guys, even their outfielders. They're all built on speed, and they like to steal bases.
Now, this is where you might think their pitchers have given up 15 home runs there this year.
So they've only hit four, but they've allowed. So that might prove my point then that they just don't have a home run hitting team, but that the park plays, it plays as far as the home runs. And it's hard to gauge them on TV, unless you get like six camera views, how hard the ball was actually hit. But it looks like the ball carries well there. But moving right along.
Okay.
In the Pacific League, Seibu has 30 home runs, and SoftBank has 27. Nippon Ham, a team you might not think it has a lot, and this probably is you can give some of the credit to Sho Nakata. They have 26 home runs. So, I mean, home runs are being hit. It's not that you can't hit, good pitching, and it's not that the ball's not carrying. It's just that, it seems like maybe something that the pitchers have found out that, they can get a little bit better break on some pitches and they're throwing them.
It could well be that if the forkballs are so dangerous, that more people are throwing forkballs, and what happens when you throw more forkballs is that you get more hanging forkballs in there. I don't think there's a pitch in baseball that's easier to hit than a flat, motionless forkball up in the zone, or even in belt high.
Sounds yummy.
It does indeed, and I think pitchers who throw a lot of forkballs will tend to get lots of swinging strikes and give up lots of home runs. And it could be that we're seeing the home runs are coming off forkballs. I don't really think that's true. That's just one idea.
Yeah. I'd like to see, a few more runs. But, there's a difference between a good game that's well pitched and well played in the field that comes up 1-0, and then a game like that, somewhat what we saw today, was just people swinging at bad pitches out of the zone. Players not getting good looks at the balls, and it was raining at the Kleenex Stadium today, and that's not conducive to hitting, but it was almost unwatchable.
There are good things about having fewer home runs, especially, but I don't think you're going to see it right away. I think if if this is a stage in the evolution where we're going less from the big, you know, big slow sluggers to more players like Soichiro Amaya of the Carp and Kuriyama of the Lions, guys who, or Takashi Ogino of the Marines, people who can really fly, who can, if you make speed more important by making the home run, if the home runs are harder to hit,
mm-hmm.
speed's going to be more valuable. Teams that are faster and more athletic will have an advantage, and I think there's nothing better for the game than that.
Yeah, and it also is going to make teams do their homework on the finer points of the game, holding runners on, trying to throw runners out, moving
sure.
runners. When you're on offense, you're going to try to do your best to move runners up.
Well, we're seeing that, as I mentioned last week, perhaps, is that the sacrifice bunts are way up this year.
Right, right, and because runs are at a premium, and people want to get them when they can.
Now, there's another story to that, but I think we'll save that for another day.
All right, all right. Well, let's go on to talk about the Interleague now. Let's see. You picked the local Marines.
Oh, we don't have to do this. We do not have to do this.
It's okay. It's all right. We'll pass over it quickly. And I picked the Yakult Swallows, and it looks like they both have identical records at the moment. At the bottom of the Interleague,
and they are sucking it up pretty badly.
2-6-1 for both teams after 9 games. So I think they both lost today. No, actually, the Marines didn't have a chance to lose because they got rained out, and the Swallows right. did lose. So they are 2-7, and they're tied for last place in the Interleague standing. So let's move on.
I think we're just going to forget about the picks and, sort of enjoy the season there, John.
You know, that's the good thing. The good thing about predictions is you really don't know what's going to happen, and they're not predictions. They're just guesses. But thanks a lot, Termel Sledge, for helping me out because I went with the team he picked. I'm blaming it on him.
Okay. I can't blame it on anybody but myself. Now, the Hawks, no surprise. I think we're surprised every time the Hawks lose a game.
I'm not surprised when they lose. I'm surprised when they win with guys, you know, like Hiroki Yamada and Tadashi Setsu starting.
And Hosokawa hitting 167 or whatever.
Yeah, that's when I'm surprised when they don't lose. But
of course, what it is, as you pointed out today, and it stuck up to me, I'm a fan of the way the Hawks, a lot of things the Hawks do, and Nobuhiro Matsuda. You know, if this had happened 2 years ago, I would have said right on, but I'm so used to him underperforming.
Yeah.
That he's hitting about where I expected him 2 years ago. It's sort of like he skipped a step.
Uh-huh.
This is where 2 years ago I expected him to be about here. He's got 9 home runs and hitting .296, but he didn't seem to do anything in the meantime.
No, they've been throwing him out there. He's been mediocre. And
yep,
all of a sudden, the light has clicked on. But, I mean, that was the case for Yuya Hasegawa for them last year. He had a breakout.
Sure.
Or was it the year before? He had a breakout year for them.
Last year, he had a breakdown year.
And, the light has gone on, and the kid's, you know, he's got 9 homers, and he looks the part right now. He looks like if Hiroki Kokubo can't go, that he can step in and fill a role as a slugger, and they can put Matsunaka back out there
maybe we can get Itaro Kobayashi in here to talk about that, because he wouldn't say anything sensitive regarding the manager's decisions, but certainly 2 years ago they had Lee Bum-ho as their number one third baseman, and then Matsuda got the job because Lee was a bum. And then they took his next challenger, who's the minors, who's a guy I really like, who is Egawa,
mm-hmm.
and they've made him an outfielder, which is, of course, like almost giving him a death sentence with the Hawks, considering how many good outfielders they have.
Right.
But Egawa is a good hitter, and they basically gave Matsuda the job, wrapped it up, wrote his name on it, engraved it, insured it.
Yeah,
and he's responded. Now, I don't know how much of that was you know, what they saw in fall camp from him, which could have been something. It's very often what happens in fall camp is a big key to the team's direction in the spring. In spring, if they get a big, if a player really blows people away in the fall, it means he's, you know, front of the line in the spring. And if he kept that up, then they basically gave him probably say, okay, he earned the job, and now that he's got it in his pocket, he's running with it.
Right, right. Well, speaking of running, I think the Hawks are going to run away with this interleague thing. Do you think anybody can catch them? My Dragons are actually putting up some good numbers in their play.
Oh, sure. Sure, the Lions can catch them. The Dragons can catch them. I mean, it's a small difference between where they are, and, as long as the Lions forget about what happened last year when they had interleague locked up, with four games to play and they couldn't win, and Buffalo
lose. Snuck up there. Yeah. So, and that's the thing. That's the great thing about interleague that I like, as it comes down to the end, is because none of the teams play each other, you're reliant on the schedule heavily. And so if you have a team, for example, and I apologize, my sincerest apologize to Mr. Michael Westbay. If you have the Yokohama Bay Stars on your schedule, you're just licking your chops, assuming you're going to win at least one of those games and have a great possibility to win both.
The Bay Stars have actually played pretty well.
This year, yes.
Yeah, but they started out badly when the Lions faced them.
Yes, they did. They stumbled a bit.
And now they're playing better when the Hawks are mauling them, but they're playing better. As you know, I'm not down on the Bay Stars, but
I'm down on them. I wish that they would produce more. I think it's good, as I said, I think in our first show, it's good for all the teams to be competitive, and for all of the teams to at least going into August have a shot at that third place finish so that they can get in the playoffs. It just makes the entire baseball season so much more exciting, makes every game mean so much more.
Well, I think it is. I think as long as the Bay Stars are competitive, as long as the Buffaloes are competitive, these teams have some players who are really good, who are really attractive, that they can do things that are going to make their games worth watching, even if they're getting, you know, even if they're getting their butts kicked.
No, certainly.
Some guys you can really like, and they can play some exciting games and really, really jump on people when they're not looking for it.
Certainly, and my point was going to be that it just makes it makes all the teams all the games so much more competitive that it tests your organization. So it's not just the guys who play
the
first
team. You have
to
have more depth. You have to be more alert if you think the Bay Stars are going to beat you. You just can't throw you just can't throw Masabuchi out there all the time and think he's going to beat him.
Right. Right. It no problem. It tests the organization. It makes the end of the season when the top team emerges, you really know that it's a good organization. It's not just a good couple of players or a couple of good pitchers.
Right.
That's the entire organization is
all
good.
Right.
And that's where Ochiai of the Dragons comes in, because he's really has been given a lot of young players chances to play this year. And since I'm not sure about 2004 because I wasn't in Japan, but, since I've seen him, he's given these guys a shot, so.
2004 was a very interesting year, but we're not going to go into that right now.
Alrighty. Well, we will talk a little bit about the Oryx Buffaloes. We'll touch on that really quickly. They had a good start to Interleague. They won three games, including two,
smacked the Giants 4-1 2 days in a row.
And the Giants, and again, young players coming through for them, in particular a guy named Koji Yamasaki.
Well, Koji Yamasaki is not really a young player. He was an up-and-coming player with the Carp for many years, and he's had attitude. He had attitude issues and attitude issues that Marty Brown didn't really appreciate. He wanted to play, and he was combative only when told he wasn't going to play. They they relocated his behind to Kansai.
But he gave him back-to-back. He helped him get back-to-back victories, and it looked like they were going in the right direction when actually they won Interleague last year. So I was expecting them to do better, but then they lost two in a row at home to Chunichi, and they look like the same old. Same old Buffalo. So
Oryx, you just keep waiting for the organization to do something really, really stupid. This is a team you like a lot of the pieces. Sakaguchi, you know, you could go up and down the lineup. Okay, Obiki's an underachiever. He's got talent, but I thought he was a really smart guy. He hasn't really developed a lot.
And I was expecting more from him, and I just haven't seen it. I've been disappointed too.
Yeah, I think we were sold by Terry Collins' enthusiasm. Of course, Terry Collins' enthusiasm is enthusiastic about everybody. Essentially, if they like playing ball, Terry Collins likes them. But Obiki hasn't grown up. But the number of guys who have, and a number of good players on that team, you really think they should be going somewhere. I think it's less a factor of the talent in the organization.
Mm-hmm.
Because I can't say, I don't think anybody could look at the Oryx Buffaloes and say, oh, I understand what they're trying to do.
Right.
They are a mystery. They have good scouts. They get quality players in the draft.
Uh-huh.
How they develop them in the minor leagues is a mystery because they don't really seem to know what they're doing. They don't seem to follow any noticeable pattern. Yet, kids eventually do come out of their system and they do play well mm-hmm. when they get a chance, and then the organization seems to be able to find a way to mess that up. They seem talented, but disorganized in the extreme.
Right. Well, so, we wish them luck. Yeah, we wish them luck. The uniforms look cool.
You like the uniforms, yeah. I wish the players luck? Absolutely. I hope they play better? Yes. They deserve better. Are they going to get there? No. Because eventually they realize the organization is full of screw-ups. Sorry to some of the people I know in Oryx who...
maybe this will... When you talk about them this way, maybe it wakes them up and says, you know what, we can't have people bad-mouthing our organization, and especially if they're right.
Yeah, I hate that one.
And
right.
So, because if you can defend it, then you have some fodder to shoot back with. There's some ammunition to shoot back with. But if you can't, then you go out and lose more games, and you can't blame people for talking about it.
Well, I'll tell you, you got to look at Oryx. I mean, you watch 10 Oryx Buffaloes games and ask yourself, do you think they know what they're doing? And I doubt anybody's going to say, yeah. Okay. Let's go on to the next one.
Next point is about the Yomiuri Giants and their pitching woes. Now, they set a team record. They went 35 games into the season before they got a complete game. Now, what a complete game it was. It was a shutout.
Yep.
Tetsuya Utsumi throws a shutout. He throws 152 pitches.
What's up with that? What were you doing? What were you thinking?
You know, I was managing that night. I was a guest manager, and I said, look, you know, you don't take him out until what's that old rule? I got no idea. I would have taken him out at 120. I don't really think he needed to go into, but I think they really wanted to get that complete game because the. You know, maybe you can tell me this. Tatsunori Hata, the manager, is he really affected by what the press says or what he reads in papers or hears all the time? Because there's really no reason.
I think less than anybody. I think perhaps less than anybody except Ochiai.
Picking on my man. I'm
saying he's not affected by the press. I think he's, Hara's fairly bulletproof.
Yeah. Well, let's see. I'm going through the game here, and in the fifth inning, Utsumi got the leadoff man out. He gave up a single. He got a strikeout.
Yep. Okay.
And after that, he retired 12 in a row, and he got into the ninth inning and allowed a two-out double. So I guess they figured, you know, it's a 2-0 game. It was a two-run game. So I guess they figured, hey, we'll let him we'll go after one more guy, who was a left-handed batter, Kazuya Fukuda, and he got him out the end of the game, and they didn't have to worry about the bullpen, although I'm sure someone was warming up. A few people might have been warming up, but I don't, why? I mean, I want to see how he comes out of this in his next start after throwing this. And I don't know too many guys. I mean, Matsuzaka threw a lot of pitches, you said before. I think you said Daisuke
Matsuzaka. Well, he throws that's in Wakui range. He throws a lot of pitches.
And the only guy I can remember who routinely threw a lot of pitches in Japan was Hideo Nomo. And I don't know.
That was a different era then. I mean,
it was a different era, but and he threw a lot of pitches continuously because he wanted guys to swing at pitches out of the zone.
He walked a lot of guys.
And he just walked them. Yeah, if they didn't swing, they got walked. And you know, but they didn't get hits off of them a lot. It seems so. I don't know what's
up.
Well,
we'll see. I mean, I don't. You know, I've said it before. We don't know. We don't. You know, you can if you go back and do a forensic of the game and his previous games, and you try to use, I don't know what, biomechanical models to study the stress, to estimate stress levels.
Mm-hmm.
You might make a good guess, but my answer is he threw 150 pitches. You're just going to have to wait and see how it affects. There is research to study that there is a negative effect, but it's not a very big negative effect across the board.
Right, and what I always hear is we don't know.
And I've seen 150 pitches, or I've seen very high pitch counts, and the next week has had very little effect. Now, what it does down, I don't think it in itself is the answer. I think he has the core strength. He has a very compact delivery. I don't think he's a real candidate to have his arm fall off all of a sudden.
Right.
Now, one question, of course, you want to ask is why have the Giants done 35 games without a complete game, especially when complete games are, you know, they're basically there for the taking.
Well, but they have also been scarce. I mean, you know, guys come out in the eighth inning after pitching eight shutout or scoreless innings sometimes because the team is winning and, you know,
the
pitch count is high and,
right.
You know, managers think they're getting tired. Maybe, you know, there's no reason to make them labor out there through the ninth inning.
Well, not only is it a thing of we're laboring in the ninth inning, but we're in an era when getting closers lots of saves is seen as a good thing, as opposed to, you know, to some degree, chasing the numbers as opposed to chasing the wins.
Mm-hmm. Which you've written about before, yeah. And,
which I have, and yeah. Okada, the current Oryx manager, is a heathen in that regard. I mean, to be really nasty, I mean, the guy's just a pagan when it comes to saves. He worships the damn things, more than the wins, and he loses focus sometimes. Perfect manager to have at Oryx. The question is, right now the saves, complete games are all over the place. Okay, you say, well, we're essentially in the same era we were last year, except we're not because of the new ball. Runs are down, big pitchers are throwing big games and lots of them. We had in, from April 12th to May 28th, last year, we had 25 complete games. I'm just gonna double check that right now. We had, I think, 25 complete games.
Well, the other thing I like to look at is, if the ball is better or for pitchers or if it's an advantage for pitchers, how are the good pitchers or the elite doing as opposed to, how the guys who have always done what they've done, for example, their mediocre guy usually comes through the season with, you know, 10 or so wins maybe. Is he getting more strikeouts? Is he getting fewer? Is he giving up fewer home runs? Is he giving up fewer hard hit balls? I'd like to compare those guys, but certainly
well,
you can
they are.
Runs, yeah.
Yeah, we can, and I can't, you know, just right off the top, just as a number of complete games last year, in this same period last year, there were 9 complete games. This year, 28.
28, yeah. And that's because guys are giving out fewer base runners. Whips are down.
Fewer batters. They're facing fewer batters. I could tell you exactly how many fewer batters, but that's just going to bore people, so we'll just skip that. But hits are down, so a number of batters on base is down. People are giving up more outs through sacrifice hits.
Right.
Fewer home runs. Less worry about about home runs, perhaps.
And that helps you get through complete games. So it's a mystery as to why the Giants had to go this long before they got one. Does this reflect a very bad rotation for them?
I think it really reflects Ara's lack of confidence in his rotation has been misfiring all over the place. And he's gotten a few good starts here and there, but they have been stuttering, misfiring. You know, if you come up with a better metaphor for the Giants' engine there, it's one that ain't working. They're not firing on all cylinders.
No, they're not. The only thing I can think of is sucky.
Well, you took the word right out of my mouth. Sucky was the next thing, right on the tip of my tongue.
Fear anybody. I mean, they don't have anybody who they're going to throw out there who batters fear. Now, they're going to respect them. Certainly, they're not shaking in their boots when they see the rotation. They don't really even care who's throwing. They figure they're going to score runs. When teams come in, come into Tokyo Dome, I think their attention is fully on how do we prevent runs, because we're going to score.
It could well be that Hara is basically to the point where as soon as one of his starters gives him any sign that he's about to blow up, Hara's going to go to the bullpen.
Right.
He seems to have lost a touch of his confidence. I don't think it's the press talking to him, saying, you know, you're not getting complete games. Or I don't think he might have been in that one case. It might have been, okay, I'll show you. He has that kind of a combative nature sometimes.
Right.
But pretty much he has a plan and he sticks to the plan. So I think he's more or less, his confidence level in his rotation is low, although I think with Utsumi getting win after win, that's going to change with Utsumi.
Yeah, who's 6-1 now. Wow.
He is indeed. I know, and some very unimpressive games in there.
Yeah. Well, but he's 6-1. I mean, DJ Holton is 6-1, and he's been impressive. And I guess that just tells you how finic or how the wins loss record is something that you really can't gauge. I mean, sometimes it's just pure luck. I mean, DJ Holton won the game the other day when he was lifted for a pinch hitter, and that pinch hitter happened to come through in a one run game. But I mean, still they had to finish off two more innings. And DJ wasn't out there throwing. Somebody had to protect a one-run lead, and they got the job done. So he gets the win.
Balls had to be caught. And their guys had to go. The relievers had to go out there execute pitches that he could do nothing about.
You can set
the tone to some degree, but as we've learned, or at least as Masaru Takeda has learned, there's a lot of things you just cannot control, and one of them is scoring runs behind yourself.
Yeah. Unless he was lucky because it was interleague and he did get a chance to bat, but that might not be a good thing for him. All right, well, moving right along, we'll go on to the blunder of the week, and it's turning out to be this big thing, and I got to be honest, I don't think it's a big thing, but let's set the stage here for people who don't know. It was Thursday night.
Right.
The Hanshin Tigers are playing host to the Lotte Marines at Koshien Stadium. And Mr. Matt Merton apparently forgot how many outs there were. And he catches the ball. He goes down the right field, He catches the ball and he's near the
runner
line.
On second base.
And there's a runner who's, out there jogging. And actually he was touching up. It was, Toshiaki Imae. And he was touching up and he went back to the bag and he decided he was going to move over. He was going to move up a base, but meanwhile, Mr. Merton thought that was the third out, and it was only the second out, and he catches the ball, flips it into the stands. An 8-year-old elementary school boy ended up with the ball. So we've seen it in the majors before. I've seen it, maybe once a year, and, they make a joke about it on ESPN, blah, blah, blah. But this Hanshin team hasn't been winning, and it wasn't like it was the tie-breaking run or anything. They were down 3-1 at the time. It made it 4-1 in the eighth inning. I don't think it's that big a deal, but
in the terms of the game, it's not a deal at all. As you said, it was a 3-1 game. It made it a 4-1 game in those final innings. Teams lose those games, you know, unless it's the Chinichi Dragons doing the Lions the other day. Mm-hmm. They don't lose those games. But essentially, it was a small thing. It's a symbol. Now, I've never seen a Japanese player do it. The last player to do it was Chris Latham with the Giants back when the Horiuchi was the manager.
Now, that was a
team that was going every which way but up. And, you know, you have to wonder about a talented team. The Tigers have a lot more problems than just talent, one of them being that they're older than Methuselah. It's just amazing how old they are. And
they're getting older every day. Yeah.
They are indeed. I think we'll know their true age when they put Kanemoto out in left field with a walker. But no, I'm just joking.
I say wheelchair.
Anyway, the whole point being that it's a small thing. If people make a big deal out of it, it can be. But I haven't spoken to Matt about this yet. But knowing Matt, there's not very little Miami could say that would hurt him more than how hurt he felt for doing that. Well, he's very conscious and he's very conscientious.
Yeah, he looks. I mean, he felt horrible. You could see it on his face. I saw replays of the incident, but I mean, the words he was using, and I haven't seen. I mean, other than Katsuya Nomura bashing his Rakuten Eagles over the years, I haven't seen too many managers who go at a player in the papers, but I mean, I haven't seen it. Maybe I'm not reading enough, but that might be me. But Akinobu Mayumi says called the mistake absurd and stunning.
Well, it is pretty absurd. It is pretty absurd, but you know what? The absurd does happen.
It happens, exactly.
And the thing in baseball is what you do with your, as in life, is what you do with your mistakes. Do you overcome them or not? If you dwell on them, no. Merton is as conscientious a player. You know, players work hard. He works harder than most. You don't see his effort that often. He did have a difficult start to the season. I think he'll be a little more focused as a result of this. Like I said, it didn't hurt him in the game. It could turn out to be a very good thing for him.
Yeah, I mean, the next game, he started in as a leadoff batter. He had 3 hits. That helped.
Yeah,
it always helps to produce, guys. Keep that in mind. Children, always keep that in mind. If you make a mistake, it always helps to be productive afterwards.
Bring home the bacon, baby, and always forgive it.
And he had a hit today, so yeah, he's got, what, 4 hits in 2 games now after the incident. But I mean, they're just losing. They're losing every day. They're behind. Or you know, they were losing for most of the day today. If they didn't get a home run and a good pitching performance from Kubo today, they would have been in trouble today, but somehow they pulled this one out. But they just don't have it going here. And of course, I'm hurting because I predicted, again, one of my famous predictions this year, that they would win the Central League.
I hate to burst your bubble, John, but your predictions are not famous.
Oh, they're not. Yep. Well, you know them.
They're not famous. So none of our predictions are famous.
You know them and I know them, so.
Okay. Oh, I think that's right. Well, what we know must be famous. All right. Now, the last thing I want to say about that is there's a great Bill James line about teams that start blaming individuals.
And Bill James, he wrote
Baseball Abstracts back in starting in the late 70s. And before we go on too much about Bill James, which is if you know him, you either love him or hate him. More people love him than hate him. Perhaps many people don't understand him, but he's a very he writes in a very down-to-earth style. He attacks the issues head-on, cuts away most of the bullshit. Can we say bullshit? Okay, I guess we did. All right.
You just did.
And basically, okay. Wow.
Go ahead.
Okay. Now, one of the things that he said on occasion, when you see people looking around for a scapegoat, that's a sure sign that a scapegoat will soon be necessary.
That's a good line. So I like that.
If they make a big deal out of this and they start dwelling on it and saying, well, this is the kind of thing that we can't have over and over and over again, and start beating a dead horse with it, well, then their dead horses just wait to get beat.
Okay. All right, well, he's playing, he's producing, hopefully people will forget. Hopefully the Tigers will start winning some games and we won't have to worry about it too much anymore. Let's go to fielding the questions.
Okay, we have a listener question from Dugout Joe. He says, I'm really enjoying the show. Keep it up. Thank you, Dugout Joe.
Thank you very much.
We never really hear about expansion or relocation in Japan. It seems there are quite a few sizable cities that don't have teams, and teams like Sabre and Oryx really don't draw at all. I always wonder how they remain viable. Do you think there's a market for expansion? And what future do we see for teams like those he mentioned? Well,
you want me to go first, or are you ready to go? Go ahead.
Yeah, you go. I'll go first because I tend to be a little long-winded. I'll try to get it over quickly.
Yeah, okay.
Basically, some of you know the Yokohama Bay Stars TBS tried to sell the Yokohama Bay Stars last year. Apparently, the only sticking point was that they wanted the team to stay in Niigata. Except, gave away the game. They wanted the team to stay in Yokohama because they're partly owned by, I understand they're partly owned by the city of Yokohama.
Mm-hmm.
And a few years ago, the Seibu Lions, after their owner was indicted on some charge or other, tried to sell them, and one of their conditions was that they stay at the White Elephant Seibu Dome. And of course, they couldn't find any takers because the only organization that benefits from games being played at Seibu Dome is the Seibu Railroad.
Right.
So those tend to be those have been deal breakers in the past. Now, Wayne Grassick, who's a columnist for the Japan Times, loves the city of Niigata. He loves that hard off Echo Stadium in Niigata. Apparently, it's a very good facility, and I think although Niigata may not have the big, may not be a population center, even in the sense that Sendai is a big population center.
Mm-hmm.
So much of this game is about local identity. And this is so much of the game that Japanese baseball, particularly historically in the Pacific League, has been missing. That's why we've seen the Nankai Hawks become the Fukuoka Daiei Hawks and the SoftBank Hawks and build up a massive fan base in northern Kyushu.
Right.
That's
right.
Why we've seen the Nippon Ham Fighters become, you know, escape the shadows of Tokyo and Tokyo Dome and move to Sapporo and become massive drawing cards in Sapporo.
Only,
and that's
only
why
thing
we
in town.
See,
yeah.
They're the only thing in town. People go to their games and pass on the Giants. That's why we've seen the expansion team in Sendai do so well. That and a variety of other things. The whole point being they have built local fan bases.
Right.
I think
right.
A team in Niigata could do better than I think the best candidates to move to, for example, to Niigata. I don't think it's going to be Seibu, but I think either Oryx or Yakult. We haven't had a Central League team move since 1978 when the Bay Stars moved all the way from Kawasaki to when the Taiyo Whales moved all the way from Kawasaki to Yokohama.
So far, yes.
Yeah, far away.
They took a bus.
So near, but just so far.
They took a city bus to do that one. I don't know why the Oryx Buffaloes don't draw so well other than the fact that the product hasn't been great. I mean, as the King Tetsu Buffaloes, a team that won more, you know, often than the Oryx Buffaloes. I think it was a better product.
Oh, sure, it was a better product. I'll tell you a short story. Mm-hmm. When Kevin Byrne joined the Oryx, the Kintetsu Buffaloes, I think in 2002, and I saw them all at the. I saw him and Jeremy Powell and Tuffy Rhodes at the Kintetsu Buffalo's camp in 2002 in Hyuga, Miyagi Prefecture, we said, you know, you don't have a lot of fans. How do you feel? I said to Kevin. He says, well, if we win, we'll have fans. And I turned to Jeremy Powell. I said, you want to tell them or you want me to? Because they had come off they'd won the Pacific League pennant and they didn't draw.
Yeah.
I think it might have been 2003, and they didn't draw the next year either, and then 2 years later they were gone.
Right.
So it's not always a matter of winning.
Yeah. I don't know what the Oryx Buffaloes could do. And it seemed like at the moment, that they have some popularity that has some staying power, but, and if they just could put a good product out there, that people would come to see. Yeah, people would come to see it. But
they need a brand. They need an identity, which they don't have. They need some success on the field, but I think they need the product. They need to market their product, and they're not doing it. Like so many teams, they're not doing it, and they don't have the local fan base to succeed when they have no margin for error when they miss.
Right. Now, in terms of the Cebu Lions, from what I was told, and I actually did some interviews for a story, but I never got to do the story, and this was probably 2007. And I went out and I asked one of the officials at the team there at the office. I said, you guys are not drawing very many fans. What's the deal? And of course they brought out papers and they brought out these figures and they said, look, we're drawing just as many fans as we did last year. You know, there is not a significant drop off in attendance. And then I started going through the stadium and I talked to a few people and I came across this kind older gentleman and he said, well, I'm just a diehard Lions fan, but I live in this area. And when they built this ballpark, they essentially obtained some of the land and made some of the people move from their homes. And they didn't do it in a very amicable way.
Okay.
And they lost... They alienated themselves basically from the people in Tokorozawa City, who said that they would rather go take the train all the way into town and see the Giants than go around the corner or down the street and see the Lions because they had to move out of their homes.
The Lions are a hard. The Lions have this issue. Chiba, to some extent, used to have this issue in that. They used to essentially play in a cul-de-sac.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to get to. It's not near. It's not a transit hub. It's the end of the line.
Right.
Now, Makuhari is becoming a little mini metropolis out there. It's quite a community. When they built that stadium out there in the late 80s, it was desert. There was nothing out there.
Right. Yeah, it's a budding metropolis.
It is. Yeah. It's built up and it's got quite a local economy. There's quite a buzz going on in Makuhari. Tokorozawa, the area around Cebu Dome, there's some condominiums up there and there's some houses on the road.
And Shin Tokorozawa is a place that's been growing. It's an area of growth that's trending up still.
Right, but that's far away. When you go to Cebu Dome, you have to come back the way you came.
Well, you're thinking train, but a lot of people who live in that area drive mostly, and they can drive up there in about maybe from Shin Tokorozawa. I believe they could get there in less than 30 minutes, depending on the traffic.
What you really want are people who are going to go to the game on the way home from work, and then they're going to go, you know, they're going to stop at the game, and then they're going to go home.
Right.
But Cebu Dome is a detour.
Yeah.
You end up, it's not on the way to anywhere.
It's more of a detour. It's a day trip.
And it's a dead end, baby.
It is.
And it is. It's It's a horrible. I don't want to rag on Cebu Dome.
Well, it's just a difficult place to draw, but they still have a strong fan base, and I would imagine that they would move.
It's a more attractive park than it was a couple of years. They took that. They did good stuff with the Matsuzaka money they got from the Boston Red Sox.
Right, for the posting of Dyson.
Still a bit of a dump, but it's has some pretty nice points to it.
I don't see any teams moving. I don't know where they might go. Even in Niigata, I looked it up here in Japanese on Wikipedia, and it says that the prefectural population is a little bit more than 2 million, or close to 2.4 million, but I just don't see them supporting. I mean, there's a lot of farms out there.
It is a fairly agricultural area.
Yeah.
It is hard. It would be hard.
But not impossible,
I don't think. They might end up playing a lot of games stealing a little bit from the Eagles fan base in Yamagata. But perhaps playing a lot of games in Toyama, which would definitely step on the toes of the... Well, of course, it would mean the death for the Baseball Challenge League in Hokuriko if they had a Pacific League or a Central League team up there.
Right.
But would Hokuriko support a team in that whole area? Could they play games in Toyama's got a beautiful stadium as well. Yeah. I think if they played... They could probably play 12, 14, 16 games in a year in Toyama, maybe 40 games in Niigata, and perhaps a few in Yamagata and somewhere else, so they could probably get by. But again,
supporting a team for a long season. I don't see it happening, but that's something we can discuss on a future show. And speaking of future shows, let's hope that you click in next week for the next show.
Right.
Thank you for listening.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Dugout Joe, for the email. And please, everyone, you can email the show at yakujohn@gmail.com. We'll try to answer them on the show. All right. Thank you, everyone, for listening. We'll talk to you next week. Good night, Jim.
Good night, John.
All right.